Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Immature people are prone to temper tantrums, just like teens and toddlers. Numerous mothers told me they had learned to deal with this by simply not reacting. As one mother put it, calm is always the high ground. Another female executive told me that she once pulled into a studio parking lot and inadvertently took the space of a big, self-important executive whose sense of himself was determined by things like his parking space. He threw a full-scale hissy fit that would have made any kitty proud. I thought, I'm watching a 4-year-old, she said. And then I thought, there's no point talking to him. He needs a time out. She restrained herself from reacting, and eventually she received a call of apology. This is an excerpt from the book, If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything, Leadership Begins at Home, by Ann Crittenden. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has been an active advocate on behalf of the economic status of mothers for a number of years. Ann Crittenden is an award-winning journalist, author, and lecturer. She was a reporter for the New York Times for 8 years, writing on a broad range of economic topics. She has also been a financial writer and foreign correspondent for Newsweek, a reporter for Fortune magazine, a visiting lecturer for MIT and Yale, and an economics commentator for CBS News. Her articles have appeared in every national newspaper and numerous magazines. Anne is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and has served on the board of the International Center for Research on Women. Among her well-known and highly regarded books are The Price of Motherhood, Why the Most Important Job in the World is Still the Least Valued, and the most recent, If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. She is married and the mother of a teenage son. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Anne.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
What would you say our society's most prevalent myth is about parenting?
I thought about that, and I think it's probably the myth that parents are omnipotent, that somehow we can control everything or protect our kids from all the dangers that are out there. I don't think it's true. I think there are many, many influences, beginning with parents, but neighborhoods, peers, teachers, other educators, a whole range of influences. And I think parents can let themselves off the hook a bit and let themselves breathe a little deeper, that although they will be undoubtedly the most important influence on their children, they can't do everything. So relax a little bit.
How has this myth played out, have you seen, in our society as a whole?
Well, I see particularly a lot of pressure on mothers. I think the mothers in America right now are pretty torn, and I see a lot of guilt. If people are working full time, they feel like, oh, am I doing the right thing? Can my child do as well if I'm not home all the time? And I mean, there's just not a scintilla of evidence that a full time working mother has any kind of detrimental effect on her child. In fact, there's a new study out just a couple of months ago showing that the average full-time working mother today spends more time with her child than the typical stay-at-home mother in the middle 60s. So we're in a very child-centered period, and all the evidence I've seen shows that mothers in particular are sacrificing everything else but time with their children. Leisure time with their husband, housework, cooking, you name it, but they're not sacrificing that all-important time with their kids.
Sounds like that makes for some very frustrated people.
Well, the stress levels are horrible. I mean, we do have a workaholic culture that's demanding that people give it all to the job, the office, and we have this myth that you better be everything to your kid. And I have a little bit in my book on that called Being There, that you're supposed to be there. Be there on the job, be there for the child, and of course everybody knows you can't be in two places at once. So that's a formula for frustration and stress.
I remember the conflict of having a son who had to be at a football game. He was young, it was junior high school football, and I had to be at the television studio where I was producing the show that was going to air the next day. And I had to go home, drive him to the football game, abandon him to other parents, that's how I felt, and come back to the studio and continue my work. And I remember thinking, where do I belong? Do I belong in this job, or do I belong with my child? It was only one football game that happened for, but he's now 32 years old, and I still remember.
Does he remember?
I don't know. That's a good question. What he remembers is I wouldn't give him permission to play football in high school. In the 21st century, of course, as you've mentioned, some women can choose between working full or part-time outside the home or staying home to raise their children. Why is this still considered an entrapment?
I don't think it's an entrapment, but I think people feel really excruciating choices. That's how I would put it. We often hear the argument, well, you choose to do this, or you choose to stay home, or you choose to work full-time, or whatever. But I think, really, the real actual choices facing most mothers are excruciating. There are a couple of bad choices. I put it in the book, your right arm or your left. Mm-hmm. You know, if you love your work, or you've trained for a career, you've trained to become a lawyer, a doctor, a business person, whatever, and then you find out, all right, the terms of this deal are you've got to work 60 hours a week, which is the term. Those are the terms if you're a professional. Or, I mean, how can you feel like you can be a decent parent if you have to work those kind of hours? So you have to choose between hours like that or staying at home. And there's virtually no decent part-time work for highly educated people. So there you are. That's a good choice? No, it's a terrible choice. So I think the rules of the game are setting it up to trap people in that sense into two choices they don't want. You know, what most people I talk to, who college graduates anyway, many, many, many mothers would rather have a job they've prepared for at reasonable working hours, which isn't, we really shouldn't think that's asking too much.
What changes do you think we need to legislate to make parenting choices less punitive and more egalitarian?
There's a whole bunch of them. Well, the workaholic culture is what I was referring to, and that's a really tough one to try to turn around. But it's important in the first instance to remember it wasn't always this way. In the 60s, we worked fewer hours than other developed countries, including Japan. Now we work more hours than almost any other country on Earth. So it's been, in 30 years, a huge increase in work pressures. So the first thing to think is this isn't inevitable, and a lot of people protesting this could change it. Specifically, one of the worst things going on is that there's no such thing as paid maternity, parental leave for mothers or fathers in the United States. There are only four countries on Earth that don't have paid parental leave, and we're one of them. That's nothing to be proud of. So parents have to rush back to work immediately after childbirth because they can't afford to take time out. American mothers have to go back to work sooner than in any other rich country, meaning they have more infants in daycare than any other country, which is absolutely against our stated family values. So that's number one. We need paid parental leave. I would like to see things like a ban on mandatory overtime. Right now, let's say you're a parent, you've been hired to work 9 to 5. Suddenly the boss says, you're going to have to work 2 nights a week, or you're going to have to work Saturday. And you say, but if I do that, I won't be home for my child, or I don't have a spouse, or my spouse works long hours. I have to be home. You're fired. There is no law against that. So we really need control on forcing people to work overtime. That's another big change.
I wasn't even aware of
that
one.
That's amazing.
No, it's big.
It's a shock to me.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on why the most important job in the world is still the least valued, parenting.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Ann Crittenden, author of The Price of Motherhood and If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything.
What would you tell women who are about to re-enter the job market after staying home for a period of time to raise young children?
Well, that's a very important question, because the vast majority of people who do stay at home for their kids do eventually go back to the job market. Children are not dependents forever. In fact, that's part of the parenting challenge, is how to move them into that independent stage. I have one almost ready to graduate from college, and I'm already debating, you know, how do we graduate him, you know, from the parent subsidies and so forth. But anyway, I think the advice I would give, number one, to anyone re-entering the job market is to have self-confidence. Don't apologize for having stayed at home. Never say, oh, I just raised my children in the last 5 years or whatever. Never, ever treat that experience as anything but very valuable time spent and very valuable time learning skills that are totally relevant in the workplace. And that's what my book, If You Raise Kids, You Can Manage Anything, is really all about. The incredible skills you learn on how to manage people, management techniques, leadership skills, all of those go with raising kids. So I think, first of all, realize that you haven't spent your time in Siberia or with your brain on ice or whatever. You have spent your time learning a lot of important skills.
Can you give some examples of how these skills transfer? I know there are a million, but maybe take two or three.
All right. Well, you started the show reading an excerpt on what I call How to Spot a Baby When You See One. people who've raised children have dealt with a lot of irrationality, whether it's two-year-olds or teenagers. And unfortunately, a lot of 40-year-old people in the workplace act the same way. So you do learn how to take all that kind of behavior with a grain of salt. You do learn a little bit more about how to deal with it. You learn everything from how to prioritize your time. People always say, well, certainly you learn how to multitask. Absolutely true. But multitasking, if you think about it for a minute, isn't just juggling 10 balls at once. It means you have to decide, which tasks am I going to tackle? How to prioritize? What's the most important thing? What do I have to do now? What can I put away for a while? You have to learn how to deal with focusing on an issue amid all kinds of distractions. Focusing amid distraction. Parents do that and often apologize for the fact that they're dealing with all these distractions. But management jobs are all about distractions. So I have found, and it's interesting because it's also in the management literature, what a busy parent does is pretty closely tracks what a busy executive has to do. It's not that different.
I found out that I was a much more organized person than I ever realized. I never attached that label to myself when I was pre-parenting, although it was probably there to some degree because we all have certain traits. But after my kids were all in school and I started applying those skills to other things, I thought, I really do know how to prioritize. I really do know how to organize things. It came from doing that in my home.
I have one really funny story about that. There's a former congresswoman who actually raised 9 children. She had 5 of her own and 4 of her late sisters. So what, and you know, how is she going to do this? Well, one way is delegating. And that's a good skill. Nobody can be a decent manager without knowing how to delegate. So she learned how to delegate. And she told all the kids, look, at a certain age, you've got to do your own laundry. We can't ask anybody. I can't do it. So they did their own laundry. So what they would do is put the clothes in the washer and then forget about them. The next one would come in and throw those clothes in the dryer. And then the next one would see that and take the ones in the dryer and throw them on the floor. Well, over a period of time, the pile of clothes on the basement floor grew and grew. And she went down one day and saw this, and she said, what are we going to do with this? So she called Goodwill, and they took it all away. And she said, one noticed.
Oh, my goodness.
She
oh
swears that's a true story.
Goodness.
So you don't have to do everything. You know, cool it a bit, you know.
I have a very close friend who has 6 children, and she told me, number one, they all did their laundry by the time they were 9. She was shocked that my youngest son, who was the age of one of her kids, wasn't doing his own laundry. And then she told me, if they leave things around, I just throw them down the basement stairs. If they want them, they retrieve them at the bottom of the basement
stairs.
Same
story. But this gets back to your question about the myth, because, you know, in the old days, 6-7-year-olds were doing jobs. Children were much more independent than they are now. And I think we do have this myth that we have to do so much for our children, that they aren't as self-sufficient as they could be. And I'm fascinated because in The Price of Motherhood, I was doing a lot of research for that book, and I found a study in the 50s, ancient old study, that showed that it was only of sons. In those days, they didn't study daughters. But the sons of parents who had let them make more of their own decisions, who will be your playmates, you know, how you're going to tackle this issue or that issue, who were allowed to have that kind of independence, grew up to be more enterprising adults. So that's a good story for overstressed parents, I think, to realize you can let them go a little bit. And that gets to another lesson I think parents learn. You have to let your children go as they grow older. You know, a lot of the stages of childhood have to do with letting go old dependencies and growing into a new sort of independence from your parents, from the toddler on up. So people who raise children thoughtfully have to learn how to let things go.
It almost lends itself to a management style of what's my goal for this child this year.
Everybody I interviewed about management said the most important, one of the most important lessons is how to let your people show their skills, how to let them get out from under you, how to let them show their own initiative, how to let them make an occasional mistake that isn't too big. You set rules, but give them that chance. Let them go. And if you don't do that, they never grow. They never show their stuff. So it's very similar with children. I had a wonderful phrase I was given by a very important line manager at Texas Instruments who manages a $1 billion facility. She's raised three kids, and she called it growing human capabilities. She said, the most important thing I learned as a parent that I applied to my work is growing human capabilities. Let them grow.
What do you see as the role of parent education today?
The role of parent education? Oh, interesting question. I think we need more of it. It's one of the most amazing things to me that we have a society where you need all kinds of training. People who have pets go out for training. You need more credentials, really, to have an animal, if you've ever tried to adopt one from an animal shelter, than you do for raising children. We don't have any licensing. We don't have anybody. And when I was frankly nervous about having a child, because I'd never been around children very much, and I was over 40, and I was thinking, oh my God, you know, how am I going to handle this? One of my friends said, don't worry, Ann, any 12-year-old can do it. You know what I found out? They might be able to have a baby, but they can't raise a child. So there are two different things. And I do think we do need much more appreciation of parent education. That, for instance, child development is a very serious academic discipline. In the last 40 years, we've had amazing research and amazing increase in understanding of the stages that children go through and what is age appropriate and what they can learn at a certain age and how to deal with these stages. And I don't think you should try to go through all that without understanding some of these realities of children's development. So we do need parent ed just the same way we need much better training of people who are in early childhood education, from daycare workers to nannies. I think it all boils down to the fact that we need to respect the work of raising children a lot more than we do. It is a highly skilled job that requires a lot of understanding. So parent ed is one way to increase that understanding.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on why the most important job in the world is still the least valued, parenting.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Ann Crittenden, author of The Price of Motherhood, and If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. What would you like to advise men and women who are now considering becoming parents but are not yet parents?
Well, there's an answer. Get some more education about what you might face.
Right. Get a license.
No, they're going to have a heck of a life when they have a child. But I think you do need to read. You do need to know about child development and know what you're getting into there. Talk to all your friends who have children. A lot of people, for instance, are under the impression that all you need is a crib and a few jars of baby food and whatever. People don't have a realistic view of how much it's going to cost. They don't really understand the incredible outlays that parents now have to do. And there's very good data on this, that a lower middle class household spends $600,000 to $800,000 raising a child. Upper middle class households spend well over $1 or even $2 million raising children. So it's no joke, the cost. And nobody tends to figure in what is going to be the cost of having one parent on the job. What are the opportunity costs? In other words, what are the lost incomes of the parent who tends to pull back on full-time work or take a part-time job or not work at all for a number of years? This costs, if you've got a college education and you're the flexible parent, you may lose as much as $1 million in lifetime earnings. So you need to know all this before you take on a child.
I don't think too many people who are parents would advise against having children. I think once you're in it and you're in love with this little person, as the person grows, of course, even more so, I don't think too many people would say, don't do it.
The price of parenthood is so high economically in America that I think I have heard certainly a lot of people say, I didn't have children because, you know, I just didn't think I could. Mm-hmm. The price would be too high in terms of losing my career, or mostly it's in terms of losing a life course that you really think you wanted and that you planned for. But no, people don't think economically when they want a baby.
Yeah.
If in my case it was, I got to describe it as a biological urge. And I was the last thing I was thinking about were things like that.
And there's a reason that we've been
biologically
programmed this way.
No
That's
kidding.
Exactly right. Yeah. But when I think about babies and I think about how people treat babies and so forth, I think of other societies like Japan or other European societies where it's wonderful when you take a baby into a group of grown-ups, or when you take a baby out shopping or something. Everybody is thrilled. In America, we don't seem to value that very much.
It's really true. It's really a difference. Actually, I might add that in Europe, they also let dogs in.
Oh.
First thing you see is a dog in a restaurant. And so it is a much more open, like, you know, you don't all have to be well-dressed adults in every social setting or every public place. But no, we're not that child-friendly. It's true. It's hard to take. You can't take children into movies. You can't take them into some museums. There's your entrapment, I think, that a lot of stay-at-home mm-hmm. parents find. With a baby, they're supposed to be what? Confined to the home? If they can't take the child into public places, where are they supposed to be? So it is we're not that child-friendly. And that goes back to the fact we don't even have policies that let parents have more time with their children.
Yeah. It sounds like we need an overhaul in a lot of different categories, big time. Everybody out there, get your placards and get ready.
And in addition to your books, The Price of Motherhood and If You've Raised Kids, what other resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to go a little farther than we've been able to cover in today's conversation?
Well, there are a lot of good books and magazines out there. I want to recommend one magazine people may not have heard of, which is called Brainchild. And it's a very smart magazine, mostly aimed at mothers. One of the interesting developments now is that there is a burgeoning mothers movement of people who do want to do things, change some of these things, like the overtime situation or parental leave or sick leave. You know, like half of Americans don't have one day of sick leave. Imagine dealing with that if you've got a small child. So these websites would include mothersoughttohaveequalrights.org. That's a good one. momsrising.org is a new one. It's partly sponsored by Move On. There's mothersmovementonline.org, which covers some of these issues I've talked about. There's a book called Unbending Gender. It's a very bulky title, but it is a very brilliant analysis of some of the problems facing working mothers and the economics of it. And, of course, my own books, which I highly recommend.
For good reason. Well, Ann Crittenden, we are so grateful that you could be with us today to help us talk about the most important job in the world that's still the least valued.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of one of Ann Crittenden's books, If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything, or The Price of Motherhood. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 294 and tell us if you can what station you are listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you are tuning in. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is also available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just click under the title and guest names, listen to podcast, and there it will be. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.